A bit touch and go for markets across the Asia Pacific today, and the Straits Times Index also seeing a slight pressure on it, but also not a lot of people looking so animated or upbeat or even inspired in today's session, and perhaps traders across the region taking stock again of what was yet another collapse in oil prices. Well, how bad was it? Well, WTI or West Texas Intermediate, the May contracts have fallen by almost 19% and currently sits at levels we haven't seen in 21 years, below $15 a barrel. Don't even get us started about where Brent crude is trading because it got dragged down as well, currently at just at under $28 a barrel. And this, of course, sending a lot of market watchers scratching their heads over what to make of this and whether this will bring more volatility for markets moving forward that are still dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Today on MarketView, we're joined once again by Mr. Jeffrey Haley, who is the senior analyst for Owanda. He joins us live from Jakarta to talk about what he's seeing in these markets. Jeff, first and foremost, I hope you and your family are safe and in good health out there in Jakarta, and welcome to the show.
Yes, indeed, we are. Thank you for checking.
So let's talk first about this collapse. Of course, there's been a lot of downward pressure on markets, and this is the May contract that's fallen for WTI below $15 a barrel. Now, just very, very quickly, maybe this is a good time for us to explain to our listeners what exactly these futures contracts are and why they're set at these and why we saw them set at these really low levels right now that has a lot of markets worried about continued volatility from the commodity space. What do you make of these? And if you can explain just very quickly how these contracts are set?
Okay, well, firstly, a futures contract is the right to buy or sell a commodity or something at a price in the future, at a fixed date in the future. So what we've seen is in the case of West Texas Intermediate, down nearly 20% today, as you said. The May contract basically expires at the end of today. It actually stopped trading on Friday. Apparently, there has been a huge amount of retail inflows into ETFs and into the futures contracts before the expiry. What has happened is that those either have to do two things. You either take them to expiry or you roll them into the next futures contract, in this case, the June one. But it was so expensive to do it. It looks like a lot of people, a lot of investors haven't bothered doing that roll and have now found themselves long crude oil with no exit. This means that they've had to sell the cash, which is why we've seen futures up. We saw the price collapse on Friday by, I think, about 14%. And we've seen oil down again 20% today in Asian trading. And my target was around actually $11 for this, which was the 1998 lows.
All right. And whenever oil starts to move, there usually introduces a lot of volatility, specifically to emerging markets. And we've seen it actually happen before. Those fund outflows have started to ease after market drawdowns. But if oil sinks even further, what could this actually mean for emerging markets? And more importantly, given Singapore sits in a sea of notable emerging markets in the ASEAN space, could this have some blowback for Singapore as the lone developed market in this space?
Well, I think it depends on who you are in this emerging market space. Now, clearly, currencies are countries with currencies tied to the export of oil, such as Indonesia to some extent, but particularly Malaysia in the region. We may see some downward pressure on both their stock markets and on their currencies because of this collapse. Although I will add that Brent crude is the actual, outside of America, Brent is the international pricing benchmark, and it has only fallen about 3% today. So that may be limited in the short term. We definitely have seen follow through, though, into the Mexican peso, the Canadian dollar, and to a lesser extent, the Norwegian krona. Mexican peso has obviously got a big beta to the United States, so and its economy wasn't looking very good anyway, even before COVID-19. So I think, there could be some blowback as far as the petrol producers go, the oil producers in the region, but it's actually good news for the rest of Asia. Singapore doesn't produce oil, it actually refines oil and then sells it on. So it's in a happy place as a middleman. Obviously, big importers such as Japan, China, South Korea, this is all great news for them with oil prices falling to sort of 21-year lows. That's going to make their cost of input so much cheaper.
That is depending, though, if whether or not they can find storage for this, though, right? Because it's been an issue right now. Storage capacity is starting to run out across the world. There doesn't seem to be a warehouse or a rig right now that you can store this oil in, right, Jeff?
You're absolutely correct. And part of that is because of this Saudi-Russia price war, where they both increased production. Also, with the COVID-19 pandemic, the demand hit per day is something like about 30 million barrels, depending on who you speak to. So up to 30% of what was being consumed a day is now no longer being consumed. Oil producers haven't cut production. And so the world is very, very rapidly running out of onshore and offshore and hiring a boat and putting the oil in that capacity all over the world. And this is why you're seeing the spot market so soft. If you look at the prices for futures into the future, so to speak, they're actually higher prices. Nobody wants oil today. Hence, we're seeing spot Brent, spot WTI, the near futures in both under so much pressure and near-term prices collapsing.
All right. We're still speaking to Mr. Jeffrey Haley, the senior market analyst for Owanda, who's out in Jakarta at the moment. We talked about this being good for some economies, especially refiners, but there's one trader that seems to be really quaking in their boots from the fall in oil prices. Hin Leong in Singapore is teetering. They've actually showed that they might be negative equity, 3.3 billion Singapore dollars. But I want to focus on its impact on the banks. It seems that a lot of banks have a lot of exposure to the broader oil sector industry, and there are worries that you could start to see defaults among these refiners, these traders, that could carry to the bank balance sheets. How is this affecting your outlook for the broader banking sector, not just in Singapore, but across the Asia-Pacific region, especially after Wall Street banks had that discouraging set of earnings last week?
I think it's important to realize that banks themselves have risk management tools and policies. They won't have all their lending out to one particular sector or to one borrower. In the case of who you mentioned before, there's about 20 banks, I believe, who are lining up as creditors. The big three, I think, their total in Singapore, their total exposure is around 600 million,
right,
for example. But that's split between the three of them. So it's not going to send anybody out of business, so to speak. I do believe that as far as the US banks go, we're seeing them front-loading their bad debt provisions. We saw JP Morgan and Wells Fargo doing that last week, taking massive provisions to get all the bad news out of the way in Q1. I think actually, as far as the banking sector goes, though, post-GFC, their capital ratios are much higher. And I would say, actually, if any sector was well-placed to weather a COVID-19 recession, it would be the banking sector these days.
All right. And as we saw from that oil price collapse overnight, Jeff, we're also coming off of that Friday where we saw the shocking economic data from China's GDP, U.S.'s the jobless claims in the United States, and also those discouraging earnings we saw in the United States. But overall, if you've noticed, markets haven't really collapsed, and they've only taken a half step back so far today. And overall, April's been actually good for many equity markets. There's on the surface, it seems that there might be a disconnect between how the markets are moving and the global economy is heading. Is that a fair assessment? And why do you think there might be a disconnect, if you agree?
I think you've hit the nail on the head with the word disconnect. It's been the source of much head scratching over the last couple of weeks, my head included. Mm-hmm. I think what's really driven this process, though, is yes, undoubtedly there is a disconnect between what is happening on the street and in our daily lives and what is going on in Wall Street and other stock markets around the world and in other asset markets. I think the real crux of this is the Federal Reserve coming out with their $2.3 trillion monetary policy, monetary injection, quantitative easing package the week before last, where they said basically they would buy municipal bonds in the US, but they would also buy all sorts of low-grade credit, high-yield credit, venture capital-issued bonds. So basically what the Federal Reserve in the US has said is that they will backstop anybody's losses. We will buy any sort of dodgy bond to make sure that we don't end up with a liquidity issue and a credit crisis. And because they've done that, I think that's really a green light for investors to buy stocks, because at the end of the day, the Fed has pretty much said that it will ease rates and inject and intervene and quantitatively ease to make sure that those losses don't become structural. Now, whether that's the right train of thought or not, I myself have some doubts about, to be honest. So I think we've seen a lot of hope, but not a lot of substance come into markets in the last couple of weeks. And I would be cautiously about being overly bullish at these levels.
So given the fact that the liquidity seems to be helping markets a little bit, Jeff, do you think that's going to hold, though? Because the worry right now is that this could actually be just a dead cat bounce in the markets at the moment. What is your take? Or can the good times, the recent decent times, sustain themselves? Or do you think that the strategy right now is just to wait and see in case something bad happens, as is proven over most of the first quarter?
Yeah, well, when you've seen a 25% bounce in, say, the US equity markets over the last couple of weeks, it's a little hard to say go out and buy more. I think caution's definitely part of an investor's strategy at this stage. I think that we just don't know. We just don't know how this COVID-19 pandemic is going to trace. We don't know how long it's going to be with us. We don't know if we're going to get second waves of infections. We haven't even got past the first wave of infections in North America and Europe. And until we have much more clarity on that, it's very, very hard to construct a bullish case for equities, because the real economy, as we can see, is suffering tremendously all around the world with more to come. So definitely I would say that investors should have cautious portfolio construction, and they should definitely be fairly heavy in cash and generally bunkering down for which I can imagine to be some more rocky roads ahead. The world just doesn't recover in this V-shaped manner. This is just not really how real life is.
Perhaps just some caution as we head deeper into the second quarter. Jeff Haley, Senior Market Analyst for Owanda, thank you so much for joining us today on Market View. And as always, I wish you and your family and loved ones continued safety and good health out there in Jakarta. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. And you, JP.